I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Starts Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Adam Elliott, the man who may have contracted food poisoning, or worse, over Easter weekend of the podcast. Let's hope I'm fit enough to play, much like Jorginho Rutter. And I'm joined today by Martin Riley. The first Easter weekend game of the podcast, a bit messy, but we got a much-needed point in the end. And I'm also joined today by the second Easter weekend game of the podcast. Still a bit messy, but you all ended up a little bit of a mess at the end after securing a crucial 3 points. It's Will Clay. Will, how are you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. A lot better given what happened after the 85th minute yesterday, because if that hadn't happened, I'd be worried. But as we are, it's all right. I can take 4 points out of six and we move on.
And what did you eat tonight?
I haven't eaten my tea yet. I could talk about lunch if you want. That was very nice.
That's a bit of a touchy subject right now. Yeah. I'm not, sure what has set me off, but something has set me off either today or yesterday, and I'm not feeling 100%. Nah, don't worry. I managed to eat tea, but then after that, I was feeling a very weird. And yes, I'm here. I'm battling through. Another man battling through who I know has not eaten his tea because I've already asked him is Martin Riley. Martin, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. Besides not having eaten, I've sort out the kids' tea rather than my own after finishing work. So I've only had time to do a quick prep for this and feed them. So I'm running on fumes, but I can cope. I'm a good boy. But I'm doing better than you, and I hope you get better soon, Adam.
Yeah, it's a good time for two of us to be running on fumes when we're literally doing a double header podcast. But I'm sure we'll be absolutely fine. And as Martin alludes to, we are here today to review our 2-2 draw with Watford, but also our 3-1 win over Hull at Elland Road. But before we do, is there any news to speak of, boys? I think it's mostly just injury stuff, like the fact that Gruev could be back, which would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yes, definitely. He's a player, we've missed him quite a lot, I'd say, in these two games. It's more because we're having to play other players out of position, although Gray is more natural as a centre midfielder. Sort of back line is sort of quite steady with him at right back, and even taking him out of that does have an impact, I think. So I would probably prefer to stick to the preferred 11 where we can. So yeah, him being back is also good news. Not so much good news for Charlie Crew, who will probably jump back out of the side when they've just come back in. But yes, it's good for the team overall, for sure.
Yep, and also there's been a bit of talk that Nonto might be back a little bit sooner than expected. Now, I can't confirm that from any reliable source, but there's been a couple of things said in Twitter and even in our Discord as well. So that'd be good, wouldn't it, Will?
It would, as long as we're not rushing him back. But I sort of, my standpoint on playing for injuries, it's a terrible idea. But then, with this close to the end of the season, I just think, oh, maybe it's worth it. So it would be a bonus to have him. Even if it's on the bench and he can give us 10 or 15 minutes, I would be grateful.
Yep. And then the last ones to talk about are the fact that I think he'll be fine, but Roden was saying that he had to have some sort of injections for back spasms, which is a little bit of a concern to hear. Sam Byram apparently was struggling to sprint. but still managed to get over the halfway line quite a few times in the whole game last night. So are we concerned about those this weekend, or do we think that they should be fine for Saturday? We obviously haven't heard anything from Daniel Farker. I'll start with you, Will.
I'd hope it'll be all right with, what is it, 5 days between games? Gives them a little bit of time, but I think it is. Yeah, it's hard to not think it's a little bit of a concern. But I sort of think if they manage to soldier through 2 games in 4 days, hopefully it'll be fine given a little bit more rest.
Yeah, I suppose with Roden in particular, we obviously haven't heard Ampadu complain about anything, but Roden has just played 210 minutes for Wales and then two back to back 90 minutes, all in the space of, like, I can't even work it out right now in terms of the maths, but it's like, yeah, it's like 10 days. It is ridiculous. So it's not surprising that his body's kind of complaining a little bit at that. Martin, who would be the biggest miss out of those? Would you say Roden or Byram in our current situation, considering the sort of thin amount of options we have at the back?
I think either of them would be a miss, but I would lean towards Roden maybe just because of how consistent he's been, and he's definitely been our strongest defender for some time now. He's been very reliable, and he has got us out of some misses over the past two games. There's one in both of these games that I can think of off the top of my head where he's single-handedly made some last-ditch effort to get us out of trouble. So yeah, he would be the one for me, but equally, with how thin on the ground we are when it comes to fullbacks, if Byron was injured, then it would leave us in a position to have to play Jamie Shackleton, and he wouldn't be my ideal choice. I would much prefer to have Byron fit and available.
Yeah, I guess the big knock-on effect in this area of the pitch is just the amount of midfielders that are playing in defence. So if you take a fullback out, you need to take a midfielder out potentially, or like you say, play Shackleton. So it all is just a bit messy because of how thin we are in just a couple of areas that then have a knock-on effect in other areas. But yeah, I think that's it for the news section. So we'll get on straight into the Watford side of this podcast. And I'll start off with the game summary. So yes, Leeds approached the game in their usual 4-2-3-1 shape, with Watford opting for a 3-4-3 shape. Watford came out aggressively in the opening 20 minutes of the game, putting Leeds under pressure and having most of the possession in the opening 20 minutes. However, neither team were able to create chances during this period. Leeds then managed to get a foothold in the game and had some more possession following this spell, but weren't able to create any major chances. This spell was followed by Watford having some possession of their own, getting the ball forwards at pace. Dennis had a shot which Melier saved, but the ball landed at the feet of Bayo, who finished with power from close range, making the score 1-0 in the 31st minute. Watford then continued to put pressure on Leeds, with Leeds not being able to get out of their half often. However, in one of the moments they were able to get the ball forward, Leeds got it forward quickly to Somerville on the left side, who cut inside and curled the ball in trademark fashion past Backman to equalise in the 37th minute. Watford then got back into the game themselves following the equaliser, with Leeds unable to get the ball out of their half with any regularity in this period, and ended with Watford scoring again, hitting Leeds with a direct ball forward. The ball then fell to Dennis, who managed to run past Liam Cooper and finish well past Melier in the 44th minute. The second half saw a fight for possession, with both sides having spells, but with neither team able to create clear scoring chances. Leeds ended up growing into the game around 20 minutes into the second half by pinning Watford in and having the majority of the possession and chances, with Watford not having any shots of their own after the 63rd minute. Leeds continued to apply pressure, and this pressure eventually told in the 85th minute when Matteo Joseph bundled the ball in for his first league goal, when Somerville dribbled into the box and passed into the box. Firpo dummied the ball, Joseph struck the ball and it was blocked at close range, which he followed up by flinging a leg at the ball and striking it past the goalkeeper with his knee to equalise only 25 seconds after he entered the field. Leeds continued to be dominant and, despite coming close, weren't able to get the winning goal, and the game eventually ended 2-2. Right, I've spoken enough, guys, so this is now your turn to do a little bit more of the talking. Martin, I'll start with you. Watford made things difficult for us, especially in the first half. Was this down to their out-of-possession approach or our change in lineup in the defensive third, especially thinking about a few of the players that had to come in and we were forced into doing? Go.
So I do think it is definitely a combination of both of these things, but I would probably lean more towards Watford themselves, because I must say that they were excellent out-of-possession. They really did stifle us and put us under a lot of pressure. And stopped them building up the ball in the way that we like to do. They were making sure to stick close to both the midfielders in the game, which was Ampadu and Camara. And especially, I think that there was a bit of tiredness going on with Ampadu's game after he played a lot of minutes during the international break, and he wasn't his usual self. Also, it's been a while since he's played in midfield, so I think he was a bit rusty in the position on top of the tiredness. So a combination of a bunch of these things really combined to make things difficult for us in that opening 25-30 minutes, especially. They were really intense in taking the game to us and really getting number on the players in midfield especially. But they also made it difficult inside as well. And I think that there's something of a critical advantage that they had over our team, both in terms of tiredness and in terms of physicality. So that combination of those things really did spell bad things for us. And I think we were quite lucky to come out of the first half only being one goal down, and we were rescued by Somerville getting that beautiful goal out of basically nothing, really, because at that point in the game we had been pinned in a bit and we couldn't get the ball out of our half. So the one time when we did get it out, he pulled out the goods and helped us get around that. So yeah, for depth, for sure, it was a combination of the two, but maybe lean more towards Watford, because I did think that they were excellent in this game.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I was in my... Their bravery, as much as anything, to, you know, cleverly new in the job, just to come out and go, you know, we are going to go at these, rather than do what a lot of teams have done against us and just sit in and try not to concede.
Yeah, totally agree. And it is interesting that teams at one point in the season, I'm thinking way back now to sort of December time in particular, and maybe November as well, when teams were going a bit more mid-blocky and aggressive on us and we were struggling, and for a while we managed to deal with that. But this is one of those games where it started to look a little less, I guess, joined together, our performance as a whole. I'm going to skip ahead a couple of questions, Martin, just because it's kind of tying into something you started to discuss there. Watford fan Lou Orns on Twitter said, "It's funny, isn't it? It took Ismail leaving, he's a Watford fan, like I say, to put in an Ismail-esque performance. But what did Watford do specifically well? Because their shape was different from the previous game that we expected on the preview. And they went for a 3-4-3. And their intensity was really, really good, wasn't it? That was particularly what we were struggling with when we were trying to get the ball out ourselves."
Yeah, exactly. I can see why Luant would be happy with their performance, and especially in terms of their out-of-possession approach, because that was really what dictated the game for them. And the change in shape really did help in that, because it gave them a good, solid defensive base to fend off our own attacks when we did get to their third, and made things difficult for us. Even into the second half, when they had sat off a little bit, that did help them to lock things up and keep things solid. But the main part was their intensity out of possession. And like he said, it was a very Ismail-like out of possession approach. And clearly something which Cleverley has said, look, we know this team can do this well and be intense out of possession. So that's what we're going to go for. He will have probably said that Leeds will be tired. They've had a lot of players who will be playing during the international break. And most of their guys, I believe, were rested during the international break. So they had a good period where they could recharge from this hectic season. And we didn't have the measure of that. We had a back line which had played a lot of minutes. We had Gray, who was playing during the international break, Rodon, who was playing during the international break, Cooper, who also was playing in the international break and hasn't played much at all this season at all. And then obviously we had Byram, who hasn't been fit much recently, so he was in this game too. So that combination of those two things, with what would be as good as we were at session, really did make things difficult for us. And you've got to give Cleverley credit for that, really.
Yeah, and they got a decent point against West Brom at the Hawthorns the other night as well. So they've done pretty well this international break against teams well above them in the table, and they don't have a lot to play for. And on the preview, Will, we did talk about their aggression and physicality that they had, and a lot of athleticism as well. So it's not altogether surprising that they were able to put together a decent out of possession intensity for this game, is it?
No, that without watching much Watford. Any Watford this season besides when they've played us. I might ask Lou this. I don't know why Ismail moved away from doing the high-intensity stuff, because it's been his brand. They've clearly got the players that work. So reverting back to that, it caught us by surprise a bit because they haven't been doing a bit. But I just don't understand why they weren't to start with, because, you know, it clearly works for them.
Yep. And then on the flip side of this, Watford themselves had no difficulty at all playing through our out of possession approach and our press. Why do you think this is, Martin? It's kind of a question that spans both games, really, but I want to focus particularly on Watford here.
Yeah, in the Watford game, I was especially critical of our press. In the first half, I tweeted about it during halftime that we were really handling control to Watford, and they were able to have quite a few spells of possession. It wasn't even just in transition where they were able to do us damage. They were also creating some nice passing movements, playing through the press which we had, which I thought was pretty meh. It really was. It was only really, I think, Bamford and Somerville sometimes who were committing to the press. Oftentimes James got involved, but he wasn't really joined up, and he wasn't at the same sort of levels of intensity as what we are used to. And I'm not sure if that's potentially due to the midfield pairing of Murat and Ampadu being a bit leggy and not being able to snap in as quickly as we would like them to. And then on top of that, they were definitely outmatched physically by the midfield, which Watford had out. We said that could have been an issue in the preview, and that told. The combination of the tiredness of our players and the intensity of theirs, it really did make things difficult for us, even when we tried to press them. So it worked both ways, really. So, same sides of the same coin, if you could, so to speak. I was not impressed with our approach, but it could have been dictated by the overall levels of fitness in the squad with how much football they've played recently. So that could have been the thinking behind it. Maybe hoping to draw Watford onto us and then hit quickly in transition, but it just didn't really work at all. So I was lucky really that Watford weren't able to keep up that intensity for the full game, or decided to sit back, whichever reason it was. I think we were quite fortunate that they did decide to do that, because if they were to continue it, then I think the game would have ended differently, in my opinion.
Yeah, I certainly agree with a lot of that. And I think legginess and tiredness is certainly going to be a factor here, and probably something we're going to speak about again with regards to Hull, I would imagine. Will, I think this question is a pretty good one, which is from Eastend L29, who asked, why does our play seem to rely on random skill once we get over the halfway line? We know all our passing patterns to get it out of defence, but there seems to be no structure to our play in the opposition half. The reliance on just see what happens seems to have increased. And the reason I'm asking this is because, again, do you think that maybe some energy levels and some legginess might have also played a part in that as well? Or do you have another answer for that?
Yeah, I think all season, right, we've said one of the things we'd want Farker to do more was the sort of repeated patterns in the final third rather than looking for moments of inspiration. And then with the tiredness, it just sort of makes that worse because, you know, occasionally you saw a few times that you're looking for a player to overlap, which isn't a pattern, but, you know, at least something to help. But if, you know, Byron, well, it's more the whole game for Byron, but in general, if players can't sprint, how are they meant to go and support? Which you then leave players more isolated and you become more reliant on moments. So it is worrying. But yeah, not really sure what more to add.
Yeah, no, Martin, just on that, it's not on the running order this, so I'm kind of blindsiding you a bit, but I think you'll be able to answer it. Firpo obviously had to sit this game out because he'd played so recently in the internationals. And do you think that also had a part to play in terms of building the ball up as well, as another point that could have affected the performance in possession at least?
Yeah, I definitely do think that is something which did have an impact both in the build-up and approaching their third. Because we get a different dynamic when we've got Firpo in there, who's a natural left footer who can play ball down the line easier than what Byron can when he's playing in that position. And I think he seems to have a bit more chemistry going with Somerville on that side. And especially when it gets to the final third, the way they seem to vibe with each other, and Somerville seems to know when Firpo's going to be making that run to go beyond him and to play it beyond. And same for Tamara, who it's a lot of the time on that side as well. It's that little triangle of those three which we see so often recently, and in 2024 especially, how effective that has been. So I think that definitely did play a part. I think that's probably the main area where we do have more structure, yeah, is when we've got Firpo on that side, because it just makes things more natural. And when he's not in there, we have to rely on individual quality to create things. And that's what happened with Somerville. We all know what he can do. And he gave him a warning as well. about 15-20 minutes in, where that's when it pulled off a good save, and then it did the exact same thing for the goal, but this time, or in the top corner rather than just putting it nice, low and hard. So yeah, it is definitely a concern, but at the same time, it's worked for most of the season when we have relied on individuality, because we have got one of the best attacks in the league, if not the best. So I'm not overly worried about it. It is a concern when Firpo's not in the squad, because we don't have that little bit of structure, which we do have. But yeah, overall, I'm not too concerned. I think we should still be fine for most of the games we've got left to create what we need to get the job done.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just wanted to ask, because it kind of came to me as I was asking the first question to Will, because it does feel like that is the one area of our squad dynamic that has actually developed a bit of partnerships and interplay in a particularly strong way, is that Kamara, Firpo and Somerville dynamic down the left. But yeah, I agree with both of you. Actually, it would potentially be something that might concern you in a longer term sense. But at the same time, when you can rely on kind of individuality, I need to do that again. I'll write that down. When you need to rely on individuality and vibes a little bit, I think in the Premier League, we might actually weirdly get away with it a little bit more if our defensive structure is sound, because we might be able to transition quite well and Routier and Somerville will thrive in those moments. But when it's really compact, it's really hard to break through and you're trying to go more direct, it doesn't stick, then it becomes a bit of a problem. And that's kind of what we were seeing quite a lot here. And without Firpo, I do think you lack that sort of left footed width holder we've talked about quite a bit. We kind of touched on that one, the next question, so I'm going to kind of skip over it, which is why weren't we clicking in possession? We've basically answered that. The intensity, shape and the patterns and things like that, it wasn't quite clicking. But yeah, Martin, do you want to answer the next one for me, which is what does the data say? XG and chances created, for example, how was it in the end for us in that regard?
So there was quite a bit of a backloading for our XG, and especially during the second half. So in the first half, we created, where's it gone? Here we go. 0.17 XG in the first half. And obviously, a chunk of that was the goal. And even that wasn't a very high amount of XG, just made better by Somerville. So 0.17 to Watford's 0.55. And so we didn't create any big chances in the first half, but Watford did in the goal, which Bio scored. So yeah. There's that. And then the second half, we created 0.82, so considerably more. And we also had a lot higher share of the possession as well. Ended the second half that we had 77% of the possession. And that was primarily in the final 25 minutes of the game, I think, where either Watford sat back on purpose or they were tiring and we were able to pin them in, and they didn't create anything in that final part of the game. So there was definitely a backload and 2 hour XG. But I do think overall, possibly Watford deserved a win in this game. Just on the balance of things, I think they created the same amount of big chances as us, but I think just due to how good their out-of-possession approach was, I think maybe they merited a bit more, and we did struggle with that, with what they gave us. So yeah, it could have been worse for us, if what I'm saying, basically.
Yeah, but things did improve in the second half, and we definitely, like you say, had a few more chances and more XG. But do you know how much of that was actually through the Joseph chance, which is obviously very close range, and also the Anthony one, which is very, very unlucky, I have to say. And I think it was, he did everything right, really. It was just unlucky that it was blocked on the line. But how much of it was through those two chances, if you've got them to hand?
Yeah, the Joseph goal was 0.3 XG. So that's quite a big chunk of the second half XG, over a third of it. And then the shot which he had just before that goal was 0.14. So you've got 0.45 XG nearly, just from those two, that one goal moment, because basically you can't score from both of those chances. So one part of that, it has to be combined, really. So yeah, we created that, and Anthony's chance was 0.18. So yeah, a good chunk of that. And we could have scored from the Anthony chance as well. That was not quite a big chance. It came just under the big chance margin of 0.18, so more of a half chance. But it did definitely result in a good save from Backman. So you could maybe say that we could have won the game there, but I think that would definitely have been an injustice to Watford.
Yeah, snatch and grab it would have been. And yeah, just to round this section of the podcast off, I wanted to ask a little bit about some changes that were obviously made. We've talked about the fact that we've overperformed in terms of open play, expected goals, and not conceding a single goal in 2024 until this game from open play, where we conceded our first two of the season. But do you put too much of that on Liam Cooper, or do you think there were a lot of players that were equally culpable? Because I think a lot of fans felt he really struggled here, Martin. I'll start with you first on this.
So yeah, you can't get away with the second goal being on Cooper. But at the same time, no one's expecting Cooper to deal with Manuel Dennis. Not a single person was expecting that to happen. And I love Liam Cooper, I do, but he's not the same player he once was. And he's not going to be able to deal with someone with that amount of pace and power in his game. So he was always going to come out second best in that individual battle. But other than that, I don't think Cooper had a bad game. He wasn't at fault for the first goal. That was a combination of, I think, more the midfielders who weren't tracking runs, really. So Camara and Ampadu were quite slow getting back, probably quite tired. So that's one of the reasons for me. But we were both ball watching and not really paying much attention to the movement of Bayer. So that is on them for me. So I think it's a combination of a few different individuals rather than it being solely down to Liam Cooper, like some fans want to believe. And there's also the thing going around that after Cooper was taken out and it was back to Ampadu and Roden after the 63rd minute, they didn't have any shots, which is true. They didn't. They had no shots. They had no touch in our box, nothing like that. However, at that point in the game, they had that back, whether intentional or if we pinned them in. So we forced that onto them, or they forced it onto us by their dribbling back to try to soak up and trying to hit us in transition. But I don't think that was down to just it being Ampadu and Roden back together, because in the following game against Hull, we conceded in open play and they were the sentiment pairing. So, yeah, I don't think it's entirely on Cooper, but he definitely was at fault for the second goal.
And just to round this section off, Will, with what Martin's just been discussing there, do you put the fact that we improved in the second half down to game state and sort of even Watford's lack of intensity in that half, because they did drop off a little bit, and it has to be said, and we definitely saw more of the ball in their sort of half and their third, or do you put it down to Cooper coming off, or is it a combination, as we've discussed? Because I think that's what Martin was getting at a little bit there.
Well, I think, like we discussed about when Firpo's on the pitch, the patterns work a bit better. You know, he was on the pitch when, you know, he, in that substitution, he came on and Cooper came off, right? So that helped a little bit. But the majority of the difference, as Martin said, I think was game state. It was Watford. Whether that was tiring or a conscious choice, I'm not sure. But, you know, we've said none of us wanted Cooper to start this game. And we've said in other games where there won't be a threat going the other way, maybe he'd be okay. And in the second half, that's what it sort of was. So he might have been all right, but I can't say I disagree with taking him off.
Nope, that's fair enough. And I don't want to dig out Liam Cooper because, yeah, there were a few other performances that really struggled. That has to be said. But anyway, we're going to move on to the second half of the pod in a second. But before I do, I must talk about Patreon and go for a little ad break. So, yeah, don't worry, patrons. You don't have to listen to this part. But if I didn't do it, Tom Olsen may poison all of my food rather than this little warning shot that he sent me. Anyway, our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And if you want to pay a little bit more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts. And if you want to find out more about our Patreon, please visit Will.
patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
And there is some good stuff on there at the moment, although some of it might be a little bit outdated. It already is outdated because we predicted some stuff, didn't we, Martin? And it's all aged terribly.
Indeed it has. It has indeed.
But I'd still urge people to go and listen because it would be worth your time and it's much appreciated. But yeah, please do sign up if it's something that interests you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh! Anyway, now let's move on to the whole section of the podcast, starting with a game summary. So, Leeds started in their usual 4-2-3-1 shape, with Hull also going with the 4-2-3-1 themselves. Hull dominated possession for much of the opening 20 or 30 minutes. However, in that time, they weren't able to have a shot, with Leeds having more of the action in the opposition box, with Leeds primarily attacking in transition as well. Leeds opened the scoring quite early, making one of these transitions pay off when Jorginho Rutter got hold of the ball and drove forward, beating a few players before laying Somerville through on goal. Somerville then struck an effort towards the goal and forced the keeper into a good save, with Sam Byram tucking in the rebound with a cushioned header or something like that, with his eyes potentially, I think he said, at the far post, making it 1-0 in the ninth minute. This lead lasted until the 33rd minute, though, when Carvalho volleyed a Mawson cross past Melier. Following the equaliser, Hull then continues to dominate possession, generating some threatening moments, but no clear-cut chances. The game ended with a late flurry from Leeds, but the hosts weren't able to get the ball into the net in that half and ended 1-1. In the opening of the second half, both sides had spells where they dominated possession. However, it was only Hull who had the best chances to score during the opening 20 minutes of that half. But Leeds grew into the game and started to dominate possession and had the better of the chances in the final 25 minutes of the game. And in one of those moments, Somerville was bundled over in the box, winning Leeds a late penalty, which he duly dispatched to make the score 2-1 in the 88th minute. Hull pushed forward trying to equalise, and during a corner situation, they pushed their goalkeeper Allsop into our box. We took advantage, hitting quickly, with Dan James scoring an outrageous goal from the halfway line, making the score 3-1, and the game ended shortly after, with Leeds continuing their unbeaten 2024 run. And not only that, but we've won every game since like mid-December at home. It's absolutely phenomenal, in the league anyway. But yes, in the Discord and on Twitter and on social media, we saw plenty of head loss regarding the performance, which we will dissect now. But Leeds have been the better side this season, both in chance creation and possession terms. Leeds had 44 possession in this game at home. It's one of our worst performances of the season in that regard to the latter. And are we concerned about that, Will? Because do we need to control games to win? Or was this one of those where we actually, you know, had the better of the chances? Talk to me.
Well, my take on this, and it's been influenced a bit by what we've mentioned Ethan from online several times on here, but he tweeted something similar, is I think in a lot of games, we've had more possession because other teams sit off rather than our strengths, even when we've had the ball, is when we can create transitions. I think we sort of have possession as a side effect rather than in the way that, you know, Southampton or Bielsa, when he was here, we're going, we want the ball. It is scarier when we don't have most of the possession. But in a way, I think we can get away with it because we are good in transition in both boxes. Compared to most teams in the league, we have better quality, whether that's defending the box or needing someone to put a chance away. So it's scary, but I think we're okay.
Martin, talk to me. XG, big chances created. It kind of proved that we didn't struggle in that regard, and that even though Hull had more of the ball, they definitely created a lot less with it.
Yeah, we certainly did create a lot of chances in this game. Although, like you've already mentioned, the possession was only 45%, which is the lowest we've had at home this season. We did create a total of 2.98 expected goals, so which is a pretty ridiculous amount of XG, really. And of that, 1.86 was open play XG, so that's still a considerable amount from open play. And within all that XG, there was 4 big chances created, so that's also a considerable amount of big chances. So actually 6, even, we missed 4 of them. That's where I get the wrong thing there. So 6 big chances in total, and 4 of those which were missed. So yeah, we really did create a lot of chances in this game, which we should really have been out of sight a lot sooner than what we were. And it's just a shame that those chances were missed, because the game would have had a completely different complexion if we had buried some of those chances.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's hard to not, even though we were all a bit panicked with how we kind of did use the ball ourselves between the boxes, at least when we got into their box, as Will was talking about, we had the quality needed for the most part. And in our own box, we managed to keep them at bay. And 0.56 XG does prove that from their end, I think it is as well. So, yeah. Anyway, we'll move on to the next question. And Dan asked, what the hell was Paddy Bamford playing at? Now, I'm not going to discuss that miss because that's clearly what he wants me to discuss, but that's not what I want to discuss. I want to discuss our pressing structure because he, again, Martin, as you mentioned in the first section, was one of the ones engaging the press at times, and then the rest of it looked a little bit disjointed again. I think this has been a problem in both games. Have we lost some understanding of potential pressing triggers? I saw some discussion about this on Twitter. That's why I wanted to bring it up. But yeah, it felt quite disjointed, didn't it, again?
Yeah, it did, definitely. It was not a good out of possession approach from us in this one either. This game and the Watford game had very similar feels to out of possession, in that both the opposition were able to get through our press without too much difficulty, and we couldn't really impose ourselves on the opposition out of possession. And that was an issue for me. I'm not really happy with us being played through as easily as what we have been in these two games. And so I hope that trend doesn't continue, and it is just that these two opponents were quite well equipped to play through the press which we did have, but there was definitely issues with the press which we had, and it was more individuals pressing than being a concerted pressing structure. And again, I wonder if this is something of an intentional thing, because Farker did mention something about this in the post-game press conference, I believe. So I'm thinking maybe he expected Hull to be able to play through us, so sat back a little bit more. So I'm not really too happy with that, to be honest, especially not at home. I would prefer us to try to impose ourselves a bit more. And although we did do a good job of limiting Hull in this game, because they didn't really create that much chances really overall, but just over 5.5 XG in total. So it wasn't a lot that they created, but they could have created more, I think. They had got into a lot of dangerous situations, and some moments which didn't register a shot, like when Roden made a last-ditch tackle on Dennett to stop him being through one-on-one. Little things like that would have generated a big high-value chance if not for good last-ditch defending. So, yeah, I wasn't happy with it, to put it mildly.
It is a good job we have some good last-ditch defenders like Roden, who I actually thought was an absolute man-mountain in this game. He was brilliant. But anyway, yeah, Will, again, I wanted to just ask a little bit more about pressing. Like, obviously, some teams are going to be situational about when they press, and hyper-pressing is a thing that John in particular will discuss quite a lot of detail, but it didn't really feel like that at all, did it? It felt like Dan James and Bamford in particular were kind of running around a lot, and it wasn't very, very joined up at all. Dan James in particular, I thought, had a bit of a weird game. Obviously scored an amazing goal, and he was certainly putting up, in terms of running numbers and in terms of his intensity, a good amount, but he was a bit of a headless chicken in that regard, I thought, anyway. What did you think about that?
Yeah, there was a number of times it kept happening where he'd go to press and somebody would just pass round him, and then they'd have however many yards to just walk into because he wasn't there. And you just think, you know, if Farker was saying, right, we're going to let them have the ball, I don't mind that, as long as it's a coordinated approach after, and you all go, right, you know, we're not going to press, we're going to do a mid block, or we're going to whatever you want to call it. Whereas James was sort of doing his own thing. Bamford was too. And with the rest of the team behind them being still a bit makeshift or exhausted, it just really doesn't help your mates out to be sort of, you know, I should give some credit to Hull because they're quite decent in possession. But a lot of the times it felt like we were just gifting them progression and making it way too easy for them to just walk quite comfortably into our half.
Yeah, totally agree. But yes, we've already touched on our lack of possession in quite a lot of detail there. But we also had a few questions surrounding our lack of control and possession in this game again. Was this a planned thing from us? I noticed one of the particular moves that we were trying that wasn't working that effectively was Ampadu's 40, 50-yard sprays into sort of midfield players, the pivots. But they were really far away. The distances between them were really far, or it was into Routier. And if it didn't work, the ball was just turned over quite a lot. Do we think that was a planned thing from us, Will? Or do you think that was actually more Hull's approach out of possession actually dictating matters more in the game?
I hope it wasn't a plan, because it was terrible. but that's sort of the main point here. Every now and again, I don't mind a sort of searching ball that goes a bit further. And, you know, we know Ampadu can pull them off, but it was sort of every time he got the ball, you know, going a bit hero ball-y. And yeah, I think Hull, as Watford did a a good job of making it difficult for the midfielders to receive. Partly was we missed Gruev. I don't think there's any getting away from that, that we've mentioned Kamara and Gray aren't the type of midfielders that will sort of sit in close proximity to the centre-backs in the way that Gruev tends to. So I think we missed that a bit. I really don't want to see such reliance on the 40-yard balls to someone who may or may not be there ever again.
Yeah, Martin was already started to touch on it a little bit there, but it might have been a profile thing in this regard rather than a tactical one. So midfield profiles, we had Gray and Kamara, and talk to me a little bit about that and in terms of how they weren't able to sort of exert control of the game and the tempo on the game.
So yeah, the, both Kamara and Gray are, in my mind, two quite similar midfielders in that you want them to be the progressive midfielder. And during the first half, you had Gray, who was sitting back and more playing the role which Gruev would have. And I don't think it really suited him. But also, I think it's really the first time where he has had to play that role. So it could just be something which he learned more by doing. So I'm not too bothered about him it being tried out and it not working, because it could be used more if Gruev is going to be out for longer, so we may have to put up with it because we don't have many other options other than taking Ampadu out of defence, which we now know we don't want to happen because he seems to be better at centre back at the moment. So yeah, the profile thing definitely does come into play with this, and it's difficult to pick which one you'd want to be the deeper one who sits close to this as a centre backs and provides that out ball, because it was just constantly playing between the triangle of sadness, which was coined in our group chat, which was Ampadu, Rodon and Melier. That will be a massive big heat map between those three players, and it just it was difficult for us to get out. Hull had a really good out of possession approach in this game. Credit to Rodenia, I now know is apparently how you pronounce his name, thanks to the commentators. But yeah, they did a good job of making life difficult for us, but our profiles definitely didn't help out in midfield.
No, and we still reverted back to a lot of the things we normally do, which is Mez would either hold on to the ball in his hands for quite a while and try to sort of bait Hull out into more aggressive positions, or he would even put his foot on the ball. There was one point where he sort of turned out of pressure. I was watching a game with my brother and he let out a big like groan, and I was like, this is just what he does. Like, he's just going to bait them on. And we tried to do that, but like you say, it ended up just being a triangle of death, and then a pinged ball out that would sometimes work and be controlled, but then the player that controlled it would give it away, and it was just very, very messy, it has to be said. We really did lack some control, and obviously I think when you're trying to manage the game, I think that is more of a problem. And yeah, you've touched on it already, Will, yourself, but Strauch and Gruev would really help immensely in this position of the pitch, right, this area of the pitch, one of them, because whether it's Strauch and Ampadu in midfield or it's Gruev and Ampadu remaining at centre-back, as Martin talked about there as well, it would really make a difference, wouldn't it?
Yeah, either way, having a midfielder who finds it more natural to do the sitting in, whether, you know, there's two variations, I'm fine with either of them, but with Strauch being not very likely to play football ever, Gruev would be the hope. I think I should have mentioned, to Kamara's credit, I did think in the second half it was notable he was sitting in a bit more, and he still wasn't Gruev at it because it's not his natural game and all that, but there was a few moments where you just think that's doing the right thing. Just we needed somebody in that space, and yeah, please Gruev, get fit soon, because I don't think Strauch will be playing this season.
And Martin, just a very, very quick one on that. This is leading into some preview stuff and going into games coming up, but if Gruev is going to miss the next game against Coventry or even a one or two after that, what would you do here? Would you try and sort of keep it the same and hope that one of Gray or Kamara gets better at doing that sort of anchoring role stuff, which is what we're missing at the moment, or would you change it up in there?
I think it probably worked better in the second half when Kamara was sitting deeper and there was the one who had been more progressive of the midfield pairing. So yeah, I'd probably lean towards doing that and try not to overcomplicate Archie's role and just get him doing the things that we know he can do well, which is driving forward with the ball, getting the ball, did quite a few decent long balls in the second half as well, which I enjoyed. It's not something which you often see from his game, so it's good to see that from him. So I would probably prefer that way to go about it if Gruev is not available for the next game. which I'm not going to count on him being available for it. So I'm going to say that it's going to be Kamara and Gray in midfield again. And I would probably prefer Gray to be the further up midfielder.
Yeah, I think I agree. And as the more box-to-box player and Kamara receiving a little bit deeper, he's probably a bit more comfortable doing it. And yeah, but like you say, they are probably both better at that sort of leggy box-to-box role, and is a shame. And I just wanted to ask that because I saw someone earlier saying, because there's quite a bit of talk about Calvin Phillips at the moment going around, whether you believe it or not is remains to be seen. I don't really want to talk about it too much, but I did see someone say, look at the midfield performance last night. You telling me that Calvin Phillips wouldn't improve us, and I just thought it was quite funny because obviously neither of the midfield profiles playing at the moment in this game, and at the back end of the Watford game are actually what we would like to see, and what's preferred really. Ampadu and Gruevar are two sort of six players, if you want to call it that, and that's why it's not quite looked as joined up perhaps with these two currently playing. But yeah, Martin, I'll ask you this first. What else did Hull do well in this game for you outside of possession and pressing us? If there is anything that stood out to you, obviously we've given Rossini quite a bit of praise on the preview in terms of what he's done with them and improving them. But is there anything else that stood out to you?
Yeah, definitely the out of possession approach did work very well. We did struggle to build up with the approach which they set up, which was, I think, a bit more aggressive than what we were expecting in the preview. And it was also more joined up as well. It was because there wasn't that big gap often that we discussed, because they were pushing their back line up to limit that gap more. So it meant that we weren't able to find players in space in that area often. There were a few times where Georgie managed to find space because it's Georgie. That's what he does. And he was able to drive into that space, and that's what created our first goal. But they did do a good job of limiting that area, so we weren't able to do it too often. And I think they also did a good job of tightening that up in the second half as well, because it was more there in the first half than the second. But we were able to get down sides with some regularity. We had some good things going on the left side, especially, as is our usual thing, right? It's hard to stop Crescencio Somerville when he's playing well, and he was playing very well in this game and in the Watford game. But in possession, I thought that they were good, but I think they didn't really create too much, and that could be down to us defending our box well. I think that definitely does come into play, but they didn't create too much for the amount of possession that they did have. You can understand why maybe some Hull fans may be thinking, well, we didn't really do much with all that possession, right? And they created a lot more than what we did. So sometimes the control of the game isn't everything, because if you're able to control the game but you're not creating big chances, what's the point? Now this sounds quite Jesse Marsh, that with the in and transition often like we did in this game, but sometimes you've just got to play with the hand at your belt, and it did work for us and we did create a lot of chances through that, although it's not what we would like to see, especially not at Elland Road. As a one-off, I think it's okay.
Yeah, I certainly agree. Will, do you want to have a little go at what wasn't so good then? I think Martin has touched on it with chance creation there, but for me it felt like they had a lot of half chances around sort of the edge of the box or just inside the box, and maybe some of their decision making wasn't always the best there. I note Philogene in particular, I'm sure you would like to talk about him, had a couple of moments where I feel like he didn't choose the right option, and actually a lot of Hull fans I know after the game were pretty annoyed with him because he obviously didn't do the most in those situations, but also he just left down the tunnel and didn't go clap the fans or anything. So talk to me about Jaden Philogene a little bit and what he didn't do or did do in possession that he shouldn't have done.
Well, I hadn't noted the fan disgruntlement if he did just wander off, but that's poor. Not to go all Leeds da, but you know, you'd like a little bit of appreciation maybe. I just think he was, and to be fair, I think I should give Byram some credit in this, but I think Philogene was, for someone that some people rate so highly, I'm not as quite as high on him as others, but Byram did well to silence him. And then, yeah, he wasn't good. But then in general, Hull's attacking setup confuses me a bit, because I'd looked through their previous lineup to see who they might play up front, because they started with Carvalho up front against us, and it sort of changes every single game, which, you know, Philogene was poor, but it also can't help to have some games they had Carvalho, sometimes it was a two, sometimes it's two fine up front. 50-year-old Billy Sharp started a few games ago. A bit weird. They sort of flattered to deceive.
Yeah, they certainly did when they got into the box, and that's what I was getting at, because Villa Jean definitely had some of the most threatening moments, and then it would kind of come to nothing, which was strange considering how highly regarded he is. Anyway, I had also had a question from Russ, lots of numbers, so I'm not going to count them all and I'm not going to note them all down. On Twitter, he said, pretty simple, gents. Why do we play so bad in both games? So this is kind of to round off everything here. I presume it is pressure and nerves as much as the players wouldn't want to admit it. Now, we've kind of covered why we didn't play that badly, but I just wanted to include a question about some of the intangibles, because as statisticians and analysts, people don't always cover that side of things enough, but things like that do have a part to play in the crunch games during a run-in as well. Right, Martin, I'll start with you on this, because you've also touched on another thing, which is perhaps some tiredness, some legginess in the team as well, and that is going to be playing a part, isn't it? And so is pressure and nerves, right?
Yeah, exactly. There will be a big part for both of these two things, which we don't talk about enough on this podcast, probably. And there's a lot of expectation at the moment, especially against these are... At least this game against Hull was probably one of the toughest games that we've got left. I know you personally probably rated it the toughest, maybe second to Coventry possibly, but you definitely did have it in the top two. So this was the toughest game we had left, and a lot of the players have played a lot of football this season. So much football. The Welsh boys in particular have played a lot, and most recently a lot, 120 minutes just last week, followed up by two 90-minute games now. So it's definitely going to have an impact in their mental state, playing this much football, not having a breather to recharge, especially when other clubs are getting breathers. And I believe most of Hull players probably will have had a bit of a gap. With some of them, I think Tyler Morton may have played during the 21s for England, I think. But I think most of them were pretty well rested. So that will be another advantage that we wish they will have had over our players. And yeah, I think overall, all things considered, I'm relatively happy with our performance. I know it sounds strange because of how bad it was at times and Hull did dominate possession so much. But considering all that the players have gone through in the past few weeks, I'm quite happy with getting the win, no matter how it came. And that shows big on us as individuals that we're up for it. And even though we had two... which were very tough games, which we could well have lost on different days. We've come out with that with 4 points, which I think is pretty massive. I think that was about what me and you had said. Well, I think you said a draw and a win for both of these and didn't decide on the running preview podcast. So, yeah, I think overall we should be relatively pleased with these 4 points, and hopefully after a bit more of a gap between games, between this game and the next one, that we can show a bit of a better performance against Coventry.
Yeah, I certainly agree with what you've said there at the end. We can definitely be happy with four. We've kept pace with the teams around us. In fact, if anything, we have gained a point on Leicester, haven't we? So that is really, really good. But obviously, just before the game, Will, Ipswich scored very late. I'm sure the fans knew about it. I'm sure some of the players did probably as well. And as much as you want to focus on yourselves, there are definitely probably some nerves inside that stadium in terms of both the fans and the players. And I think the atmosphere maybe was a bit nervous in that sense as well, which is going to play a part, right? And again, like, do you think that the pressure, the nerves and the occasion might have been kind of felt more than usual for a game like this of this magnitude?
Yeah, I think in such high stakes football, at the end of any season, but this one in particular, it would be silly to pretend that it doesn't have an effect, seeing Ipswich again, you know, come from behind, score so late. But to put a little bit of a positive spin on it, I think, yeah, as Martin touched on, the horrendous context and then Ipswich's result, for us to still do our business, I'd hope would have a sort of galvanising effect that, you know, here we are, we've had an awful hand dealt in the last week, and yet, really, we've done pretty well. So we've got through what I think Watford, Hull, Coventry is the little roughest bit we have left. We're, you know, almost through it. And then, yeah, the other thing I was going to mention in positive intangibles was the Matteo Joseph effect that he's had in the last few games. It started with the Chelsea game, how well he did there, but that he's come on repeatedly and made a difference. And the last player, I think, that's given the crowd that sense of, you know, there was a noticeable buzz, right, when he came on. And the last player we had like that, I think, was Nketiah, that you think, he's coming on, he's going to score. And I just think, as much as the nervousness of Ipswich result, the crowd rubs off on the players. I think going the opposite way, the sort of excitement and breathing a bit of life back into the crowd that that can have, I'd hope would spur the team on a little bit as well.
Yeah, definitely agree. And I'll just ask you quick, because you were talking about the points we've accrued in these two games, but we had an interesting question from Alfie in our Discord. He said, if we beat Watford and drew with Hull, would we be happier with it that way around, or were you very happy with how it ended up actually in the end, Will?
I'm fine. In my own little predictor, I'd thought we'd beat Watford and draw to Hull, so we've ended up the same amount of points anyway.
Same as well.
It's a little bit unexpected, maybe, but I find it hard to get too worked up because the outcome is the same. We got 4 points. They've happened now. Don't lose any sleep over it and hope we get 3 in the next game.
Martin, are you happy with 4 points and the way around it was?
Yeah, I'm not really fussed which way around it came. As long as there was a win and the draw in these two performances, I think that's a good result for these two fixtures. Watford probably will have been the one which we will have been expecting to win more than Hull, but at the end of the day, we've still got the 3 points against Hull, so it doesn't make too much difference, at least for me. I'm happy enough with our Easter weekend, that the fact that we didn't lose, and that's definitely something of a hoodoo broken for the club. We've not done very well, especially not on Easter Monday. We've had a lot of bad results in recent years on that day, so I'm quite pleased that it was actually the Hull game where we did get
awesome.
The win.
Right, well, that is kind of the end of all the tactics and analysis stuff, but I just wanted to have a really quick section just talking about players across both games. Pick the most noteworthy ones for me, guys. Who stood out the most across two games back-to-back in such quick succession? Who performed well? I'll start with you first, Will. I just want to give a quick shout-out before you do. Crescencio Somerville was probably the player that has benefited the most from the little break that we had, absolutely, because he didn't go on international duty, and he looked really, really good in both games, didn't he?
Fully agree. He was back to... He'd had a few games in the run-up to the international break where you think, you're still good, but you're not quite what you were. But the last two games, we've seen that. The Somerville that gets goals and assists every single game back again, which is lovely. My player that I'd picked out was not someone I thought did massively well, but someone I thought I'm going to defend a bit because he's come in for what I think is unfair criticism in Glenn Kamara in both games, in the Discord and on Twitter. There's people saying, I don't think he's done very well. Well, I sort of thought he's played the way Glenn Kamara has always played, largely. I looked at his pass percentages are still the same. He had 6 recoveries against Watford, which was the most of anyone. So I sort of think the midfield has been dysfunctional and the team has been, and for reasons that I don't quite understand, he's been, at least in the comments or tweets I've seen, been someone who's come in for criticism that I don't think is justified.
Yeah, especially when he was asked to play a slightly different role across the games to usual, probably doing a little bit more in build-up than usual. So that is a bit of a strange one, isn't it? Yeah, he's certainly someone who's done pretty well considering the amount of minutes he's got in under his belt in the last month in particular with the international break as well. Martin, was there anyone that really stood out to you besides who we've already mentioned?
Joe Roden for me is, he's been absolutely massive in both of these games. He's just, I don't know how he does it because he's got having injections for this whole game, for his back spasms, and yet he still pulls out that sort of performance. Not even just out of possession as well. He's been getting more and more progressive as the season's gone on. Good on these nice runs forward with the ball, and Hull had to foul him a few times when he was getting forward and picked up some a tactical yellow card at one point. So yeah, and a big shout out to Joe Roden. He's really growing on me, and I love the guy. He's really solid for us all the time. And I can't remember the last time he had a bad performance. So he's the main one who performed well across both of these games. Sam Barham did really well in the whole game against Phil or Gene. I'm going to call him. He's not Jaden anymore. He's just called Phil. because Barham handled him. Phil or Gene had 9 take-on attempts. And you want to know how many he won?
One.
Yeah, one. He won 1 take-on attempt out of 9. Which is a phenomenal amount. I know, obviously, he moved over to the other side in the second half. So Firpo won a few against him as well, and we all know Firpo struggles with players like Philogene. So, yeah, Barham handled it very well, especially to say that he couldn't run in the second half.
He'd struggled a little bit against Watford as well.
Yeah, exactly.
In the first half of that game, and he's good.
Yeah, he played really well, especially in the whole game. I don't think he did anything massively wrong in the Watford game, but he was definitely outmatched physically against, Asprilla, who was on his side? So yeah, he was outmatched by him, but I think he got better when he moved to right back.
He
found it more comfortable at the right. And obviously, I'd want to give a little shout out to my boy, Georgi Rutter, because he was very good against Hull, especially in the first half. He was pretty much the reason why we scored the first goal, that driving run forward and playing in Somerville. And he was surrounded by two, maybe three players at one point during that and just managed to wiggle his way around, which was just Georgi Rutter all over. But then he just had to almost spoil it right towards the end of the game. Even I was like, Georgi, what are you doing? We all know the moment I'm talking about. But yeah, that was just a brain fart. I'm putting that down to, and he should have just passed the ball forward. But he ended up working well because Roden was there to cover him. Another guy who I said that has done well. So yeah, there were a few players who did well in these fixtures, and those were my pick.
Yep, and I'm just going to give a quick couple of shout-outs. Joseph, I think, deserves enormous credit, as for a lot of the reasons that Will's already stated, so I won't go over it in too much detail, but I was glad he got a few extra minutes than the first game. I think it was the 85th minute he came on against Watford and the 70th minute or something like that against Hull. The crowd definitely felt it, and yeah, he looked really, really bright again. I think there's some things that Bamford is certainly better at, and I'm not going to for one second say whether I think that we should drop one for the other yet, because I'm going to leave that to you two to decide in a second. But I think his sort of athleticism and his mobility is so much stronger than Bamford's, and it really does cause issues. And I don't even think he fouled Coyle on one of the two occasions he gave away a foul. I thought it was a really soft one. I think he just beats him physically, and it's just a shame. But yeah, he really, really impressed me, and I am increasingly of the opinion that he could play more minutes. And even though we have six crucial games at the end of a season and in a really high-pressure environment, and you don't really want to be giving young players who haven't got a lot of experience those sorts of experiences, really, he might have to, because he's been really, really impressive. And then Perreault, especially in the second game, because I think he came on and just did everything right. Every action he did was really tidy. Foot on the ball and touches were much nicer and sharper than they were in the Watford game, where he struggled a little bit to kind of control the ball at times. And I thought he was really good here, and obviously he could have made more of a fuss of what happened with Somerville. We don't really need to go into that, but he could have done, didn't. And then also on the Dan James goal, the amount of composure and vision there to not panic even though the goalkeeper's out of his box. And I know in that situation I'd be looking up as soon as I can to try and find a way to shoot. He actually just thinks, nope, you know what, I'm going to stab this to James, and then James gets on the end of it and puts it in the goal. And it was really, really good composure from him. So he's done a lot of good for himself in that second performance in particular. So fair play to him. But yeah, there were a few that certainly struggled, and I don't want to dig people out too much, but I do want to ask you both about the Joseph Bamford thing, because it's been talked about quite a bit, and a lot of people have sort of said their piece on this, and whether they think that Bamford should be staying in the team, and the upside he's had since the turn of the year, and whether Joseph should actually be kind of given a start, actually, of anything. And I know it's Coventry next, but would you start Joseph for that, Will, or would you kind of stick with Bamford for now and maybe just start bringing on Joseph a little bit earlier than what he has done, and just slowly, gradually get him to the point where he's coming on earlier and earlier?
I think against Coventry I'd start Bamford, but bring on Joseph from, you know, if we need a goal, if we're not already winning, and even if we are, maybe by the 60th minute, just go on, get on. And then depending on that, how that goes, in general, I'm a big fan of being brave in trusting youth players, which is something I admire, you know, Klopp particularly this season has been so amazing at. So I'd just say, you know, Joseph is in form. He showed he's got the ability. If he was to start a game, I wouldn't doubt him at all, and I'd be quite excited to see it.
Martin?
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I do want to see Joseph play more, but at the end of the day, I will always be a permanent resident on Bamford Island. And he's been phenomenal for most of this 2024 period, and he's a big reason why we've done as well as what we have. So I think it's just a bit confirmation bias with people saying, oh, he's crap again. We just need to shift him out and put him out to pasture. But this could be the last time where he could be used and be useful, because I can't see him being as useful as what he is now in the Premier League. So for me, I want to get as much out of Bamford as we can in this running. I still think we need to rely on these experienced players like him. And because he's through a little bit of a bad patch, that doesn't mean that he's not going to come good and score some vital goals before the end of this season. But at the same time, if Clark was to say, you know what, Joseph, you've done really well with a start, I probably wouldn't argue with it too much, because he's definitely done enough to earn it, because he's been so impactful on the appearances that he has had, and he could well have scored in the whole game as well. He came very, very close. He had some lovely movement, I just want to say, from him. He sort of made that run to the near post, but then sort of just backed off a little bit just to create a bit of space. And that was just very good centre-forward play, was that, just creating that space for himself. And I think the pass from Firpo was maybe a little bit overhit, so he kind of couldn't get a good contact on it. But yeah, he could well have scored in that moment. And yeah, so I'm kind of sitting on the fence there. I would like to see more from Bamford. Also, I wouldn't complain too much if Joseph was starting.
No, yeah, Bamford's miss was certainly worse. I think he overruns it, whereas Joseph doesn't really do a lot wrong. It's actually the pass is just slightly off. It's either slightly behind him or slightly over here, or a mixture of the two, and it means he has to try and adjust, and it's a little bit harder. Yeah, the reason I wanted to talk about this and wanted you two to talk about it first is because our good friend Tom Hostekundel, who is currently swamped with a lot of different things at the moment, hasn't been on the podcast for a little while, but he asked me to cover this, and he said, would I read out his answer, basically? And I said I would for him. So my answer is actually going to be Tom's, but it's a good one. So I need to do this, and I want people listening to listen to this because it's important. He said, things to consider. Since Bamford started games at the start of the year, his goals and his one assist have directly contributed to us getting 19 points. By this, I mean his goal contributions have changed the state of the score, i.e. his goal contribution has taken us from 0-0 to 1-0 in a 3-0 win, or in the case of Huddersfield, earning us a draw. So the only one goal that he's scored that hasn't changed the state, so I'm not attributing the goal to our points, is the third against Leicester. Prior to the Birmingham game, all his appearances were from the bench, where he had zero effect, no assist, no goals, and didn't really have an impact. While at the moment, Joseph is having an impact off the bench. Whereas if he was to start and Bamford then came on in his place, we're not going to see Bamford have such an impact. So for me, I'd keep this as they are with the six games to go. Now, I agree with about 95% of that. The only bit I would disagree with is if Bamford really does struggle in a game or two for the next one or two and maybe be tempted to put Joseph in. But that was a really, really good answer for Tom. And I do have to say that I agree that Bamford should stay in for at least the next game. See how he does, and hopefully his confidence isn't knocked. I don't think it will be. He's obviously going to be the most relieved person inside Elland Road to see that we ended up winning the game and his miss didn't mean a single thing in the end. But yeah, because he has cost us in the past at times, but this season, I don't think you can really say that. There's not really been many games at all where I feel like a big moment has cost us, other than the Stoke one really early in the season. If anything, it's the absolute opposite, as Tom says there. So yeah, I would keep him in. But anyway, I think we're basically at the end of the podcast. I don't like ending on a negative note, but is there anyone else that has really struggled in these games that's worth mentioning, or shall we just put an end to it here? I'll start with you first, Martin.
Yeah, I've got nothing else to say. I don't think there's any much point in bringing out players who have performed badly because of the current squad circumstances and how tired everyone is. So I'm not going
to. Yep, I agree with that. Will, is there anyone else you wanted to just quickly say, you know what, I want to see a bit more from them in the next game or two?
No, as Martin said, the context, as we said through the whole podcast, I think drops in performance over the last two games have several reasons for, so I don't want to treat people too harshly for those.
Absolutely agree with you both. I would have said the same. Just wanted to ask it anyway, though. But yeah, well, that brings us to the end of this podcast. Just a quick reminder, the website for our Patreon is, Martin?
patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
But thank you very much for listening, everyone. That's all for tonight. We'll be back very soon to preview Coventry City ahead of this weekend. But all that's left for me to do is to say thank you to Martin.
Thank you as well, Adam.
And thank you very much, William.
Cheers, Adam.
And to you, our dear listeners, have a great week and goodbye.